The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another post-game session with your Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on Twitter/X at Smith_MLB tonight. With me tonight, we have Jason Kelly at Color of the Iris, spelled the proper way with an O-U-R, and Doug Acheson, I got it right this time, at DAcheson23.
Nailed it.
You can find both those gentlemen on Twitter/X as well. If you're looking for great articles, BastardsOfBostonBaseball.com is where you need to go. The Boston Red Sox dropped the first game of a two-game set against the Orioles, 6-3. Bit ugly in this one. Dustin May was able to give you six quality innings in the sense of a quality start. Did allow two earned runs on eight hits. Did strike out five. Walked a pair. Gave up a home run. But overall, I don't think he's the problem. Jason, what do you think?
Yeah, this game should piss you off a little bit because Dustin May was not the problem. As you said, like, yeah, he was a little bit wild, especially in that first inning. He couldn't locate. It looked like it was going to be a short outing for him. Just the pitch count was climbing up pretty quick. But he limited the damage. Even with, you know, the amount of hits he gave up, the walks, like, he only allowed two runs. This Baltimore team is not trying. They have all their kids up. And, you know, a lot of their core is kids anyway, you know, young guys like Henderson and Jackson Holliday, whatever, but they're not trying anymore. They're just literally, they've got all the kids up to like audition them. And yeah, you went up against Trevor Rogers, who's been really good for them this year, but this was a lackluster performance from your offense. They just had nothing going. And then I think your manager made it worse because you're only down 4-1 and he brings in Jordan Hicks at the end of the game. Like, three-run deficit, that's not where you bring in Jordan Hicks. We've been joking about it, but it's kind of true. Like, if you're not up by double digits, don't bring that guy in because he's an arsonist on the mound. He really is. And he made it worse. So he kind of put the game out of reach. And I think by that point, the team was already kind of just down in the dumps and, you know, wasn't feeling it. So there was no rally. And there you go. So the offense should be pissed off at the offense, and you should be pissed off at Cora because he could have kept that game a lot closer at the end, and he didn't.
Definitely. Dougie. And I mean, it goes back to even yesterday, you know, everyone was kind of blaming like the bullpen, and deservingly so, but they still only scored two runs yesterday. Three runs yesterday. So it's just, they're just not getting runs across. You know, we had six hits tonight. They had 12. You know, they doubled us up. And, you know, May looked okay. He didn't look terrible, but it was like Walker's last start. It was like he looked good, but he wasn't good enough. And, you know, he still got knocked around for eight hits, but, you know, he struck out five, only letting up the two runs. He had some intensity on the mound. I always love seeing that from your pitcher, some intensity, but we gave him no support. And you can't expect any pitcher, even Crochet, to just throw shutouts. So, you know, right, May wasn't the problem tonight. The problem was, first of all, I hated the lineup tonight. I don't know what that lineup even was. Like, I know it was against lefties, but still, having Duran in the sixth spot, I just didn't like that lineup tonight, and I think it showed. I think you were right, Jason, when you were saying some managerial issues tonight. I didn't like the lineup. They just seemed to have no urgency tonight when they were at the plate.
For me, there's a couple things to take away. One, thank God the relievers didn't strike you out 14 times, because God forbid, you know, if you strike out 14 times against this core of relievers, we've got even bigger issues than you know, I'd like to admit. Both of the relievers that they trotted out had ERAs over 4.4 and 5.5. And you were able to get two runs in those two innings. So to your point, Hicks should not be in this situation right now until he can properly get the cleanup role. At this point, or mop-up role, I honestly think that Hicks is good for one or two strikeouts an appearance, one hit batsman an appearance, and probably one or two earned runs an appearance. So if the goal is to keep the game close, why is he coming in? So my mindset was, okay, you brought in this guy, Moran, who's got minutes of experience, and he didn't do great. He's had, you know, he didn't play last year, played for the Twins before that. And he just was struggling control. You saw the two-seam action as a lefty. You see it go left, right, then sink out to the left. And it was a nice pitch. The problem was he couldn't locate. He walked a couple guys, struck out three, which is great. He was averaging almost 25 pitches an inning as a reliever. I mean, he's literally throwing whatever he can. And this is one of the problems. You have people that are trying to paint too much. The control is not there. So one thing that we were talking about, at least Terry and I were talking about it beforehand, was Dustin May. Dustin May used to throw the sweeper and the sinker 77%+ of the time. He's now throwing a combined less than 50%. His sweeper is down 10% from when he was a Dodger to when he was when he's now a member of the Red Sox. Sinkers are now down from 36% to 19%, almost half the amount. His four-seam is being thrown almost twice as much, and his cutter is being thrown 3.5 times as often. So the accuracy and the control is it's obviously going a little bit better in Dustin May's, you know, direction because he's not throwing as many sinkers. His sinkers were insane. They would have 24 to 30 inches of movement. I mean, it would look like it was going to hit a batter and then go way out, you know, up and away. If I'm a left-handed hitter, I'm hoping he gives me that pitch inside and I'm hoping that I can make contact, but he's not throwing that anymore. You can't blame Dustin May for this game. You know, we talked about it briefly. He gave you six innings. This was someone who was consistently not able to give you even four as a member of the Dodgers. He was getting absolutely shelled. His last performance, 8 strikeouts, 6 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 1 walk. I was content. I'm like, this is the guy. He can get you 6. Can he get you 7? Maybe. Is he going to be expected to get you 7? No. But man, oh man, it's really disappointing when you put up Giovanni Moran and Jordan Hicks to try to save or salvage your game in the sense of not allowing extra runs. Because if you're going to try to say, oh yeah, we're going to be competitive, 3 innings, 4 runs on 4 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, a hit batsman, and a blown opportunity. Because if those guys aren't in it, you win this game. I'd love to assume, you know, what if Whitlock wasn't, you know, unavailable? Or why didn't Chapman pitch yesterday? And truth be told, we should have won one of the last two games. I think we should have won yesterday. I thought yesterday's was pretty unforgivable. Chapman threw 3 pitches the day before. He's not available for this one. And granted, if anybody's going to say, oh, well, Hicks doesn't pitch, you don't allow those 2 runs, you still lose 4-3. You're missing the point. Your relievers are not good enough. You don't even have a mid bullpen. Expect your relievers to allow a minimum of 1-2 runs. As one of our commenters, Smoke Dog, 1982, wrote, this was a class Cora punt. I don't disagree with you. You're absolutely right. Because you brought in 2 guys that can't keep the lead.
Anything else
you guys want to add?
Yeah. No, I kind of agree with the Cora punt comment. And look, I understand that you lost Ref Snyder to the IL, so that's one of your lefty killers that's unavailable. And Willier's banged up, so Willier couldn't start tonight, right? They're hoping not to put him on the IL, but he had to go on the bench. So you have to put Nate Eaton into the lineup. And I know that they said at the top of the broadcast he's been smoking left-handers down AAA. That's AAA. You're facing Trevor Rogers tonight, who looked like the first-round pick that the Marlins thought they were getting when they picked him in the first round back in, I think it was 2017. So he looked like that guy tonight, and he's looked like that guy all season for Baltimore. So putting Nate Eaton in the leadoff spot, I know he had the, you know, the chop base hit beginning of the game, but like your lineup looks so much weaker with him at DH and with, you know, you put Romy in there. Romy is normally a lefty killer. He couldn't do anything tonight against Rogers. Rogers froze him on a 92-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle. I don't know what Romy was looking for. He must have been guessing breaking ball or something because he should have teed that up, and he just looked at it for strike three. So the lineup was terrible. The bottom half, I mean, you know, someone in the comments, I forget who it was. I believe it was our boy Johnny Fontaine, said, can we talk about how bad Sadon has been recently? Yeah. And he has been. Sadon's been a zero for you. Like, as good as he was leading up to the All-Star break, he's been a big letdown ever since, you know, post-All-Star break. Yeah. And the bottom half of your lineup didn't do anything. Toro, Narvaez, all those guys, like, nothing. It was Jaren Duran trying to do everything tonight. Alex Bregman had a bad night, too. So you can't have games like that. And this is a game of second guesses because, Charlie, as you brought up, the bullpen really failed them tonight. Dustin May didn't fail them. The bullpen did. Well, right. Maybe if you were more aggressive at the trade deadline, you wouldn't have had that problem. Why are we going to Giovanni Moran and Jordan Hicks? Like, you could have gone out and traded for relievers and had more dependable guys, and you even got some in-house. Why is Brendan Bernardino still in AAA? Like, it's crazy. Why is he in witness protection all of a sudden? Like, I get it. He was pitching a lot beginning of the season. Maybe they're trying to rest him for, you know, the playoff push, whatever. But you keep losing games like this, you're not going to have a playoff push. I'd rather see Bernardino come into a close game like this than Giovanni Moran, who Minnesota gave away. I mentioned this last week. You traded Mickey Gasper to get Giovanni Moran. That's how little they value Giovanni Moran in Minnesota, okay? All due respect to Mickey Gasper, but he's not a very good ball player. So why is this guy pitching and Jordan Hicks pitching in, I would say, still high-leverage situations? Again, you're not down by much. Like, you're still in the game, and they just piss it away. Your offense was struggling, and you put in two relievers that are, you know, again, they're arsonists. They go out there, and they're going to give up runs. So it all points back to the trade deadline, and it all points back to just, again, weird organizational decisions, like Bernardino wasting away in AAA when he could be helping you right now. And, you know, again, trade deadline too, like, you've got guys like Nate Eaton DHing for you tonight. You could have gone and gotten a bat at the deadline that could serve as a better, you know, substitute if someone goes down, like a Rev Snyder or an Abreu. They didn't do anything. That's it. They just got Dustin May and they got Steven Matz. And Matz is okay. Dustin May looks pretty good. They got no bats and they got no additional relievers outside of Steven Matz. Like, just not good enough.
As our very own Terry Cushman informed everybody, if they weren't sure. Sorry, Dougie, for cutting you off.
No, you're good.
Jordan Hicks will be back for the next 2 years, folks, at $12 million per. You're paying $12 million a year for Jordan Hicks. So I'll say this much. I wish I had his ability of throwing 98, 96. I mean, this is someone who used to throw over 103. I don't know if I'm pretty sure I could throw 50. I could probably throw half that at this point. I don't want to blow up my shoulder, my baby 80-pound soaking wet frame. But yeah, I mean, just to add to that, what's the plan for the future? Was it, let's hope that all the stars can give you 6 or 7 and then we'll just hide everybody. We're not going to show our bullpen how bad they are. What was the plan? You save $300 million, you add Hicks, and you add Harrison, who's not at the major league level at the moment. You've dumped Tibbs already, right? We got rid of Quentin Priester because he wasn't good. And we traded Chris Sale because he didn't have it anymore. What's our issue with pitchers? It's like, I don't know if I want to take a chance on him anymore. It still infuriates me that Chris Sale got traded for nothing. No offense. I'm sorry. He's not here. Vaughn Grissom is not here. You literally paid him paid another team. The Boston Red Sox are so dumb. They paid another team $16 million for them to get a Cy Young. Let that sink in for a second, right? You wouldn't have to shell out the 20 plus million for Walker Buehler. That could have been money that was invested somewhere else. Like, gee, I don't know, maybe a right-handed bat. Ozuna could have been had for little to, you know, next to nothing. They're probably going to give him away. I honestly don't know what his contract is looking like in Atlanta at the moment, but there were options. You could have maybe overpaid and gotten Christian Walker, who's not having a great year, but I think the Monster and Christian Walker would have been a cute little pair. I'm not going to deny that. So it's starting to get a little bit dicey. Like, okay, cool. If your starters are getting you 5+ or 6+ and your offense isn't going, there's a pretty good chance you're going to lose that game because your relievers aren't even mid. Like, look at what the Padres did. I went to that game on Saturday night when the Padres relievers struck out 14. Their relievers struck out 14. Michael King only went a couple innings, so there's that. 14 strikeouts in a game is incredible. When you throw relievers in front, that makes you unforgettable. You are in a class of your own. All of the relievers that they're coming in, it's like, oh, look at that. 1.93, 1.55. 0.98, like all these ERAs that are coming out, I'm like, cute. Even if you add all those together, that's still not as high as one of our guys. Like, we just, they went out and said, okay, cool. Who's the best team in the National League? At the time, you think, okay, maybe when the Dodgers get back to normal, that's going to be our competition. The Braves, they're not really there. The Brewers, they're peaking right now, but I don't know if they're going to be able to keep this up for another month and a half. The Padres went all in. They shelled 7 or 8 of their top prospects away to beef up their bullpen, beef up their rotation, go get bats. They're one of the only two teams, in my opinion, that deserved an A at the trade deadline. Our team deserved an F. No disrespect to the acquisitions that we got. I love Dustin May. I liked him in LA. I like him now. No disrespect to Steven Matz. He's been fine. He's not great, but he's okay. Again, no disrespect to him. You made no additions offensively. Your only addition so far has been Lau, who was DFA'd by the Washington Nationals because he wasn't getting the job done. So make it make sense, folks. If your bullpen can't save a lead of any kind, you can't expect Chapman to throw 2 innings every day or 2 innings back-to-back days or 3 innings in three days total, because we just saw it not happen. He pitched an inning. He came in for a third of an inning, 3 pitches, and then did not pitch the next day. We would have won yesterday. We didn't because of dumb analytics. Doug, I know you had something to say.
Everything you're saying is totally correct. And the other thing is, like, we didn't do the right thing. We didn't get players in. We didn't make the right moves. And now we're not even making the right call-ups, I feel like, right? Because I don't see how these guys should have been in the game over Bernardino. And it just doesn't make sense. Like, he's still down there just not letting up any runs, throwing right. scoreless innings still. And it's the same. I don't see how we bring up Eaton over Campbell when we need a right-handed bat. Like, I don't really get it. I just don't get right. it. Like, we're not hitting. We need a bat. We'd send down Bernardino. All he does is still get scoreless innings. We don't bring him back up. We send down Campbell. He's hitting. We don't bring him back up. Right. I don't know what we're waiting for with those two, really. And then if we're not bringing them back up after they're producing, then why did we send them down in the first place?
I agree.
I don't really get it. And it's no. like he can only get better against MLB pitching if he sees right. MLB pitching.
I want to take a second to just talk about this for a second. Think about a rotation of Garrett Crochet, Chris Sale, Nate Eovaldi, Brian Bello, and Michael Wacha. I'll say this much. Johnny F., frequent fan and friend of the pod, one of the great writers of our group as well. I don't think we could think about it, you know, like, you know, Bill Belichick, you know, you think about, you know, being 7 years old, dating a 20-year-old, 24-year-old. Garrett Crochet, Chris Sale, Nate Eovaldi, Brian Bello, Michael Wacha, that's a pipe dream. I don't think Waka was going to stay because the Red Sox were never going to pay him. And Nate Eovaldi wasn't going to stay because we were going to pay him either. We didn't pay for Pivetta either. You could have put Pivetta in place of either one of those guys and it wouldn't matter. Chris Sale's the only one that I think should still be there. So if I could, you know, grab my eraser and say, okay, let's cross out Eovaldi. Let's cross out Waka. You got Crochet. You got Sale. You got Giolito. You got Bayo. And then insert your fifth starter here, whether it be Buehler or, you know, Dustin May. I really do think, and I like Buehler too. I'm one of the few guys that like Buehler. That's 20 plus million that, again, could have been invested somewhere else. So the moral of this story is we've just done a really poor job of making trades, and it's bit us really hard. You know, you can't dump Devers and no longer have to deal with that contract. You're absorbing other contracts. It's like, okay, great. You're not paying $300 million or whatever the exact dollar amount is for Rafi Devers. You're still paying $25 million for Jordan Hicks. You're still going to be paying odd amounts for other players as well. Tibbs is, you know, he wasn't getting crazy money, but we trade him away anyways. So after everything's said and done, is it really fair to say like, oh yeah, it was just a salary dump? You also absorbed, you know, a decent amount of money. And what are your opinions on Jordan Hicks? Do we think that Jordan Hicks is going to be able to re-find himself? At this point, I don't know. I don't know. And I like Jordan Hicks. Like, I'm a pretty positive person this year in relation to other years when I was really down. Like, Dougie, you weren't here for the Matt Hall era. I was angry. I was really, really unhappy in the world. Like, I woke up, Matt Hall was still on the roster. I was pissed. That's where I was in the world. So I think I've taken like a 180. I'm a lot more positive now than I was then, but it's still hard. Jason was there for those days. They were rough days.
Yeah. No, I remember your Matt Hall vendetta quite clearly. It was amusing, but it was also depressing because, yeah, every time that guy went on the mound.
It was so-and-so's your – no, it was whoever it was. Most people have a dud for the week. Matt Hall's my dud for the year.
Yes.
It was something like that. It was something yeah. like that.
We would do studs and duds, and, yeah, Matt Hall was Charlie's dud for the year. Yeah.
Awful.
Even if he hadn't pitched yet. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He was there.
But no, on Jordan Hicks, I'm the opposite of you. I have no faith in this guy. And look, it's not his fault. He's been screwed around by different organizations. I mean, he was a reliever, and then St. Louis had the brilliant idea of, you know what, we're going to turn him into a starter. We think he can be a starting pitcher. So they tried to stretch him out, tried to make him into a starter. They completely changed his entire approach, and they changed his entire arsenal, and it screwed him up. He never worked as a starter, because he can't go that long. And then, you know, eventually San Francisco said, okay, we'll turn you back into a reliever. But by then, he'd been so screwed up. He reminds me of Jabba Chamberlain. If you guys remember Jabba Chamberlain, how badly the Yankees screwed that guy up.
I'm going to clap for that.
Because he was an elite reliever. He actually was so annoying because he was so elite. And, you know, he liked to throw at Kevin Youkilis's head every single time he faced him. But he was really good out of the bullpen, and then the Yankees, stupidly, as they usually do, said, you know what? We're going to make him into a starter. He can be a starter. It wrecked his entire career. He was never the same after that. He flamed out. He's gone. He was out of baseball by, like, age 28, which, oddly enough, that's how old Jordan Hicks is. So I look at Jordan Hicks, and I go, you got your own version of Jabba Chamberlain. That's not good. You don't want your own Jabba Chamberlain. Not this version. No way. So I think it's, you know, I don't think that he's going to figure it out. And I think the Red Sox, this is going to be a DFA situation, and they're going to eat a lot of that money, and it's going to suck. But
wow,
it's going to be another dud you got from San Francisco. It's going to be the pitching version of Pablo Sandoval. You're going to be paying this guy's salary while he bounces around on minor league contracts, because I don't think he's ever going to figure it out. I really don't.
He's cooking. Guys, someone better get the oven mitt. Jason Kelly's cooking tonight. I want to give him the year, again, because I'm positive and apparently stupid with some of these pitchers, because I believe that, you know, he's – some of these guys have a gift. Like, it is not easy to hit 100 miles an hour. It is not easy to train and throw 90 plus miles an hour. The difference between 90 and 95 is incredible. The difference between 95 and 100 is exceptional. And he's there. He can do it. There are few guys in baseball that can do it. The Red Sox at one point had not one, not two, but three guys that could throw 100. That's insane. I don't believe there's another team in baseball that has three. And we had that. So, yeah, I don't want to give up on Hicks. I hope that he can do it. I hope really that 2026, maybe over the offseason, because I'm going to be honest, the Red Sox are not going to win the World Series this year. It'd be amazing. Miracles happen, but not in 25. I do want to shift, though, from the pitching, because we can continue, you know, hanging ourselves on this, or we can move on to something else. I really want to highlight how well Trevor Story has done. Trevor Story has been absolutely incredible. Now, one of our commenters earlier said that Jarren Duran was responsible for knocking in all three runs. You're absolutely right. And Trevor Story and Jarren Duran combined to go 3-for-7 with three RBIs. The rest of your team went 3-for-24, and they scored three runs, given Nathaniel Lau was a pinch hitter and scored. That means the rest of your team, two runs scored, didn't knock anybody else in. There was only one extra base hit outside of Trevor Story, because I talked about him, and that was Duran. That means you had no extra base hits against Baltimore. This team is now 9 games under .500. You're now 10 games over .500. There is no reason why we should be even this close in games like that. Each one of your pitchers allowed 2 earned runs. The difference is that Dustin May allowed 2 over 6 innings. Trevor Story has probably been the MVP of this season. Alex Bregman was injured. He wasn't here all year long. Trevor Story is probably going to be putting up his best campaign year after everything is said and done since 2019, when he had 35 home runs and 80 some odd RBIs. That's the Trevor Story that we were hoping to get. Truth be told, I'm not going to be angry if Trevor doesn't hit 30 home runs ever again. I don't think he's going to do it. He's not a 30 home run guy. That's not Trevor Story. He is, however, going to be a 250 to 270 guy, 20 to 25 home run guy, and I still hope to God that Trevor Story gets 100 RBIs. I really, really do. He's only done it once in his career, and he did it playing almost the full season in Colorado. It would mean a lot for him, I think, if he could do it not in Colorado, where balls fly out a lot further. I don't know where this team would be without Trevor Story. I think we'd be playing under .500, and a lot of people said, you know, he sucked in May, and he did. And I'm sure if you asked him, did you suck in May? He would say yes, because he's a realist. Last year, he said, you know, he was in tears. I want to help this team. I can't be there for my guys. I want to be there. I love Trevor Story. He infuriated so many people. But to come back after being told you're done for the year, how do you not say, you know what? I have to cheer for you. And this year, he's done everything right. He never quit, even when people were saying DFA him, like some of our, I'm going to say it again, some of our former bench players that are idiots that are no longer on this podcast. You know who you are. I'm so thankful for Trevor Story. You should be too. If he wasn't here, you'd probably be hanging yourself. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but facts are facts. So I'm happy about Trevor still being a Red Sox. I don't know about you guys, but I'm curious to hear what your takes are, because I genuinely think that if Trevor Story wasn't here, we'd be a bottom tier team again.
100%. I mean, he's been one of the best shortstops in the league. He just has. I mean, it's just the stats show it, the facts show it. I mean, yeah, he had a bad month, but other than that, he's been very, I mean, and he's making great plays in the field still. He still has range, still has a good arm, good enough. And he's really leading the team. Like, I know Bregman has been talked about a lot as a leader and working a lot with the younger guys, but Story is too. And I think you can see Duran and Story have a really close connection, and he's really bringing them along. And I mean, that other than the, you know, they're the two that are really, you know, stories really producing right now. But it's, there was a time in July where I felt very comfortable with pretty much anyone in the lineup coming to play, and now it's basically, I don't feel comfortable with anyone coming to the plate except Trevor and Roman, because I know he can always draw a walk. And I don't not trust Durant, but it's even hard to trust Zaidan now. You know, it's hard. It's hard to trust Nevaez. It's hard to trust Willier.
Who do you trust, Doug?
I trust Story. I do. There you go. I trust Trevor Story, especially in a big spot. I feel like in big spots when we need a big hit and he's at the plate, he does deliver. He hit that double in the seventh, and him and Bregman were on second and third. And I think Obi said this was the second time we had two people on together all night. It's just not good enough.
Yeah.
Jason, anything you want to add before we go to a comment that I just can't wait to go to?
I think I know which comment you're looking at. Yeah. Cause I kind of want to get to it, but we'll get to it after. So isn't it funny how Red Sox fans were so patient with Tristan Casas when he had a bad first half and really has had a lot of bad first halves, and they kept saying, be patient, you know, don't send him down. You guys are idiots for criticizing him. Those same fans wanted to DFA Trevor Story in like April or May. And look, I'll admit, there was a time where I'm pretty sure I went on this show and said, yeah, you might have to. It might be time. Like, he might be cooked.
It got close.
It did. Yeah, it absolutely got close. And look, I mean,
for sure,
you're kind of a slave to the moment, right? Like, Trevor Story looked like he was completely out of sorts and looked like he forgot how to hit at that point. So, yeah, it's a fair thing to say. Especially with Marcelo Meyer waiting in the wings. Now, the fact that he's turned his season around, I feel great for him, first of all. Like, good. That guy's been through so much the last couple of years. You know, injuries that weren't his fault. I mean, again, he got injured sprawling for a ground ball. Like, you know, he got injured trying hard. Like, you know, and then unlike Tristan Casas, he rushed back that same season. He was back, like, well ahead of schedule, even though the Red Sox were out of it. They were not going to make the playoffs. Like, they had a slim chance, but everyone
he
pretty hit, much
he came back, well. Didn't he?
He did, yeah.
But didn't and he like, hit well when he came back? Yeah.
And he did. He hit pretty well. Yeah. Like, and Tristan Casas, meanwhile, you know, was due back and took, like, all 21 days of his rehab or whatever, like, the maximum amount that you're allowed, because he had to get his dry swings in, and then, I'm still not feeling comfortable with my vision at the plate, so I got to take a few more days in Worcester. Meanwhile, the team was fighting for its life just to grab a wild card spot. And Tristan Costa's like, I'm not ready. I'm good. Trevor Story, coming off of a major labrum injury, was like, I'm good. Put me in the lineup. Yeah. I'm ready to go. So that shows you the character of the guy that Trevor Story is, and, like, he hosts this defensive camp every spring where Meyer and all the young kids go out and he kind of helps them defensively because he is very good defensively. So you got to like all that. And at this point, someone mentioned it in the comments, his opt-out. You better hope he doesn't take it, because I don't know if you can count on Marcelo Meyer to play a full season at this point. The guy is always getting hurt. I mean, past 3 years, whether it's up in the majors or down in AAA, the second half of the season, he comes down with an injury. And this wrist injury was an aggravation of something that he injured like a year ago or 2 years ago, and it re-aggravated. So I don't know if you can depend on him to play a full season. So you better hope that Trevor Story opts in. And you know what? To Alex Cora, figure it out. If Story opts back or doesn't opt out and he stays in and Marcelo Meyer's still up, figure it out. Figure out a way to platoon them, whatever. Maybe Meyer starts at second base a little bit. I don't care. I want Trevor Story on this team, at least for next year. We'll figure out the years after that. But he has completely revitalized his career. And he really has. Like, he's become, I don't want to say he's your MVP, but he's definitely, like, it's a weird analogy. Boston people get it. The Bruins give out this seventh player award. It's like the guy who over exceeds expectations. That would be Trevor Story. And they said on the broadcast the other night, like, he should win AL Comeback Player of the Year, without a doubt.
I agree. I think he's got that.
Yeah, I think he's got that sewn up. Like, I don't know who else would even be in the running, but he should definitely be that. So, yeah, I hope he doesn't exercise the opt-out. I hope he stays, because you're going to need him. Again, I don't know if you can count on Marcelo Meyer making it a full season. So, hopefully, Trevor Story stays.
All right, real quick before the comment, Dougie.
Yeah.
Percentage that he stays. Give your take on it.
I think it's high. I think he stays. I would say 70%.
Jason.
Yeah, I was thinking 70. I
might even go higher. I think he likes it here, to be honest.
I was gonna say I think he likes it here, and I think he is very grateful to the Red Sox for allowing him to figure it out. And get out of his slump.
Thank you.
Not DFA him right away. Right. And just kind of keep some faith in him. So I'm going to say 75% that he stays. Because you have to keep in mind, he's making what, 23? Is it 23 or 26?
I'll check right now.
Okay. I can't remember if it's which one it is, but he's already making pretty good money. And he's going to be 33 or 34 in the offseason. I don't know if he's going to get that kind of AAV. He might get
22.5 this year. He's making 25 each of the next 2 years if he doesn't opt.
So 25 each of the next 2 years. I mean,
good money.
Are you really going to get anything better? Is he going to get 30 from anyone? I don't think so.
No.
I think he stays. I put it at 75.
Unless he looked for longer, like unless he wanted like a 3-4 year deal and take a little up. But
his age works against him. I mean, at 34, no one's.
Yeah, I don't even know if he would get that. Yeah.
He's not going to get it. So. I'm going to go bold and say 100%. I don't think he's going to do it. In fact, I think he's going to announce that he wants to stay before that deadline and say, I don't want to go anywhere. I'm opting in. He's a character guy. As Jason mentioned, he and Bregman, if Bregman can stay and he does not opt out, yes, they're on the older side because you have Trevor Story, who's 32 right now. You have Bregman, who's 31 years old right now. Bregman's got $40 million per, but a lot of that money, you know, a decent amount. I'm not going to say a lot of that money. A decent amount is deferred. He's only getting paid about $26 million. So both of them right now are getting paid $47, $48 million. Next year, it's about $50 million for those two people. But you're taking care of the hot corner. You're taking care of short. And who knows what happens in 2027. Maybe Trevor Story does move over to second base and we make room for Marcelo Meyer, who is actually healthy. Who knows? That's 2 years from now. The Red Sox don't plan that far ahead. I really can't wait to jump on this comment. I kind of shot the moon a little bit and I posted it. This comes to us from 99 over 22. I mean, there's no way to look at it. This has to be a Yankees fan. Why do Red Sox fans call Yankee Stadium a Mickey Mouse ballpark when Fenway Park is ranked second in the most hitter-friendly ballparks in all of MLB? Yankee Stadium is ranked 15th. First off, you mistyped Red Sox fans. It's baseball fans. Your right field, your right field is 8 feet high. Literally, Aaron Judge standing up and like sticking his hand up doesn't even have to jump. He can catch the ball and go over the rail. That's how easy it is there. You would have to build a wall that is 30 feet high and then stick Aaron Judge on top, and then have him stick his arm up for it to be the same. So good luck with that comparison. It's not a Mickey Mouse ballpark. It is a stadium in which you can hit beach balls over right field. You made Johnny Damon relevant again. Remember that. Curtis Granderson was not a home run hitter. And then all of a sudden, boom, hits 40, not once, but twice. Don't have to fact check me on that. I know that because I had him in fantasy baseball. So I know I'm right. That's why. Left field at Fenway Park is still 37 feet high. If you wanted to compare the Astros left field with the Yankees right field, okay. I would say you have a point there. I find it to be completely invalid with awful bias that you're comparing left field at Fenway Park with your right field at Yankee Stadium. Again, I can't reiterate how much I need to say this. Johnny Damon hit over 20 home runs. Johnny Damon, after hitting 20 plus home runs, hit like 8 or 7 home runs the following year in Detroit. Like, it just, the power numbers dipped. Why? Because he wasn't at Yankee Stadium anymore. I honestly thought that Juan Soto was going to hit 60 at Yankee Stadium. I thought that was going to happen. It didn't, but you had another guy who hit 60 and he was a member of the Yankees. So that happened. Jason or Doug, go ahead, weigh in.
Go ahead, Doug.
Judge probably would have hit 60 this year too if he didn't get hurt. Right? It's like a little league stadium. It's really what it like. It is what it is.
Mickey Mouse ballpark as
it is. They built it knowing that they built it in a way that the wind is always blowing out. They built it in that direction, whatever it is, so it's always blowing out. You know, so I mean, what do you expect? You know, Yankee fans, I expect nothing less.
I'm glad you brought that point too, because Cincinnati did that when they built their new ballpark. They built it so that the wind goes from home plate out to the outfield. So Cincinnati is the same thing. You can launch at Cincinnati. So it's a little league park. Like, get over yourselves. It's seriously the Johnny Damon point's a great one because he went and started hitting bombs there, and a lot of it was the short porch. A lot of it was the Yankees training program. You know what I mean? That's all it is. The reason why Fenway is ranked friendlier or hitter friendly is because we have odd angles. We got the triangle in right center where, you know, even Tristan Casas could get a triple if he hit it there with his slow ass. We've got a difficult right field because the ball can bounce around. So a lot of guys get extra bases because it's just kind of a weird, it's not a, you know, boring semicircle like Yankee Stadium is. It's got, character. Funny. The Green Monster is, you know, the distance wise, it's pretty short, but you've got to hit it over 37 feet to get it into the stands. So like looking at hitter friendly rankings is stupid because that takes into effect, like, again, the odd angles at Fenway and the deep triangle and stuff like that. Yankee Stadium is a joke, dude. Some of the home runs that your guys hit into that short porch are ridiculous. Okay. So, and
Campbell at the end this year, he hit like a pop-up and it
right.
I think it was Michael K calling. It was like, oh, that's a pop-up. And then it just kept going.
Yeah. Yeah. Good old Michael K, you know, on top of his game as usual. Oh, there's a pop-up. Yeah. Susan, there it goes. Oh no, it's gone. Yeah. That's baseball, Susan. It's a joke. So, and you know what, at the end of the day, like, I stopped being mad about it years ago because you guys haven't won dick since 2009. So
he's cooking, folks.
Enjoy your joke sandbox stadium where you can hit a pop-up into right and it goes out for a homer if the wind is blowing the right way. Enjoy that. You're still not winning anything. You're not going to win this year either. So, and you know what? Enjoy Aaron Judge while you have him because he's not getting any younger. So, enjoy.
I got something for you. This is off of Bleacher Report, good sir. So let's talk about this for a second, all right? This is on Bleacher Report. This isn't Wikipedia, something that you probably wrote one of your papers on. There is no more famous short porch in baseball than right field at Yankee Stadium. I can keep going because you seem to think that Fenway's a joke. Teammates Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle made use of the short porch in right constantly as they chased down Babe Ruth's single season home run record. Since the new Yankee Stadium opened in 2009, the updated building has played like an extreme hitter's park. The stadium finished first for home run factor in 2009 and third in 2010, and it really hasn't shifted since then. So carry on with your agenda. Numbers don't lie. Facts don't either, but people do. So sandbox it up. It's great to see home runs. It's also great to see pitchers duels. I've always thought if you can throw a no-hitter at Yankee Stadium, you are in a class of your own because, like I said, Johnny Damon looked like a legend there. I don't know what else to say to that, you know?
Yeah, he backed it up with Judge will hit 50 at any park. I mean, yeah, maybe.
I don't think so. Hasn't. Is he going to hit 50 yet, in San Francisco? So. Do you think he hits 50 in San Francisco? I don't think so.
No. He probably hits over 40. No. I mean, he's still – he is great, but I mean, you can say he would hit it, but you know what? He hasn't, and until he does, he's a Yankee, and I can talk shit about him, and I will.
Yeah, he, Aaron Judge – I mean, here's the thing. We should be blessed that we got to see Aaron Judge play in our era. We should be blessed that we got to see Mark McGwire in the 90s, Tony Gwynn in the 90s, Jeff Bagwell, Ken Griffey Jr. We have a plethora of players that, steroid era or not, we're blessed to have seen hit in our era. Even Ichiro. Ichiro came over from Japan and then shattered records.
Manny Ramirez, best right-handed hitter I've ever seen.
I mean, Manny has crazy numbers. Just 555 home runs, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's 555 for him.
Yeah.
Fun fact about Albert Pujols. My wife went to the game that he hit number 699 and 700. And I thought that was pretty damn cool. She sent me a video and I thought, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. She sent me the second video and I'm like, babe, you already sent me that. It was the 700th home run.
That's awesome.
So cool little fun fact, right?
Yeah, he has better numbers than Manny, but I'll always say Manny was a better hitter than him.
I take Manny every day. Every day. Yeah. Even if he walks back to the dugout after not even running out to first base in Minnesota.
Yeah.
I forgive him for that. Anything else you just want to add?
I'm going to add one more thing. Again, this Yankees fan, you know, trying to troll us. LOL, you trade Devers for Jordan Hicks and Dustin May. You guys traded Michael King for Juan Soto, and then you stupidly didn't pay him.
Yeah.
Good job. That worked out well for you. Did you win the World Series? Oh, no, you didn't. No, oh, wow. And Michael King's one of the best pitchers in baseball. Good job.
Yeah. Even though he's injured, he's still great. But, yeah, I mean, the Yankees will do anything to stay relevant. And just out of curiosity, how did the Yankees do today? Did anyone find out the final score for that game?
They didn't play today.
I
think they had the day off today. They had a weird two-game series with the Rays. And then
The Rays? Oh, they'll get blown away by them, too. All right. Well,
if you don't play.
That's true. We don't play for a week, we don't lose a game. That's a good way to look at it, Jason. That's going to do it for all the bastards. Again, thank you so much for joining us and for all those friendly folks that left us comments. We'll look forward to communicating with you and chatting with you. We love your interactions. Everyone have a great one. Go Red Sox. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.